Fire in the hole.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Eric.
And this is House Podcastica, the Book of Boba Fett edition.
This week, we're covering the Book of Boba Fett, Season 1, Episode 4, The Gathering Storm.
And this week, I'm pleased to announce we have a special guest with us. It's our friend, Jonathan. He's a Star Wars fan. You might remember he called in and left this incredible call for the Mandalorian Season 2 finale, because he was so happy about a certain character appearing. He's also guested on the Zedhead show and also for an episode of What If with me and Remo. Welcome to the podcast, Jonathan. Glad to have you
Thank
here.
Thank you, guys.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Great
to be on.
Welcome, sir. Yes, good to have you.
A high honor.
Not that high. Come on.
Medium.
Medium high.
I asked Jonathan to come up with this week's Star Wars question of the week, and he obliged. Would you like to give us your question?
Yeah, is it what was your earliest Star Wars memory, and tell us a bit about it.
Well,
I thought that was a good one for sure.
Yeah, I like that. That was really good.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first? Chris?
Well, my earliest Star Wars memory is going to see Return of the Jedi in the theater. My dad claims we saw Empire as well, but I was very, very young then. Return of the Jedi, I was just old enough to remember it. Although, to be honest, I don't really remember it that well. I just sort of know I was there. Unfortunately, there are other movies from the 80s, that much crappier movies, that I remember seeing more than Return of the Jedi, and I wish that wasn't the case. But that is technically my first memory. But since I barely remember it, the one I'm officially going to go with here is when I was just a little bit older, a friend of mine spent, I don't know, thousands of hours, it seems like, playing a Star Wars RPG role-playing game, like D&D, but Star Wars.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my buddy was a really, really good dungeon master. And so we'd get together with a couple other guys and play that. We had a board with the physical characters on it, and everything was, all set up and played out in front of us. And I loved it so much. It was one of the most fun things, ever. So it was all Star Wars based and super fun. So that's really the fondest memory I have. And one of the earliest ones of Star Wars related stuff.
In that game, were you a certain character, or did you play multiple characters?
Well, no, you made a character like D&D, you created a character with attributes and stuff like that, and you were the character throughout. Yeah, throughout.
What was your class?
I don't remember that anymore.
Everyone wanted to be a Jedi, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right.
Or a smuggler.
That's what I was going to say.
Smuggler. Yeah.
So was it, you came up right during that age where you would, like, Return of the Jedi was big in the theater, so of course you'd go see it, and then you'd have to kind of catch up later on. Do you have any feelings about what that was like? Like, oh yeah, I need to go back and see how this whole thing started, or anything like that?
That's funny, I don't. I was born in 1975, so I didn't see A New Hope in the theater. I was too young.
Right.
I was 5 in 1980 when Empire came out, and then 8, I guess, when Jedi came out. So, yeah, it's strange. I don't really have a recollection of seeing it first, or maybe second, and then going back to the beginning, but I must have, because...
What about knowing who someone's dad was?
Yeah, no spoilers.
Did you know that?
But... Yeah, right. Don't spoil that. No, the funniest part is...
We can't spoil that.
Yeah, right. The thing is, my memories are of seeing it in order for some reason. It's like my brain just has put it all together in the way it was supposed to be done, but I couldn't have seen it that way.
That's weird, because I remember seeing Phantom Menace before Star Wars, but I know that's not right.
Yeah,
just kidding. I had a friend, because I saw them all in the theater just barely. I was just barely old enough. I was born in 71, so I guess I was 6 when I saw Star Wars. But my friend Steve went and saw was, I guess it was, yeah, it was Empire before me. And he came to school the next day and was like, oh, this little green guy is Yoda.
Oh, yeah.
And,
oh,
man. And Luke and Leia are brother and sister.
He Homer Simpson that thing walking out of the theater, didn't he?
All right, Eric, what about you?
So I have a memory of going to see Star Wars, but I honestly, I don't remember it. My mom has told me this story so many times that I've just kind of adopted it. You know, she went and it was opening day and it was a madhouse, and she sat me. I had to sit on her lap because there was so many people, you know, there. But I'm not going to count that one. What I am going to count is I remember going to JCPenney's. And Darth Vader was going to be there in the flesh. Wow. And I was so excited. They were having some big sale with action figures. But I went there and I saw Darth Vader and I got a picture where he signed Darth Vader. So it's a little glossy picture, which I still have. And then I remember these gigantic bins of Star Wars figures. And I was like in action figure heaven.
I guess Darth Vader would have a signature, like signing off on Imperial papers and stuff.
Yeah, I know, exactly, right?
Did you see the behind the scenes of Boba Fett, where, under the helmet, I think, where they had Boba Fett and Darth Vader walking down in that parade, and he was there signing autographs.
Signing autographs, yeah. It was this glossy picture, you know, it was a picture from the movie, and they had them there. So it wasn't like I brought my own, but they had a big stack of them. Yep. And then he would actually sign it in front of you and give it to you.
Did he? But did he address it to you? Did he put your name on it?
No, no. He wasn't talking, so I didn't get to hear him speak.
Because he would have sounded like this.
James Earl Jones. Yeah. I know. Hi.
Thanks, kid.
May the force be with you. Action figures.
His voice modulator was broken that day.
Yeah.
Right.
What about you, Jonathan?
Well, I'm the perfect age for Star Wars. I'm a bit older than you guys, and I was 10 years old and went to see A New Hope in the theaters and not knowing anything about it and going in and with my five other cousins and my mum. We all went in, watched the movie, and then came out and was running up and down George Street in Sydney going, pew, 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 shooting with laser blasts. For the first time ever in my life, the first time of many laser fights that I've had. But I clearly remember the Luke walking out to the twin sunset and kind of staring off into space and it just blowing my mind and changing my life forever and me wanting a life of adventure. And that's and I kind of like traveled overseas and saw the world. And I honestly believe it was that moment in that film that kind of sparked that desire.
Wow. That's awesome. That is amazing. I'm a little bit envious of that.
That's pretty cool. I don't know if
yeah, it's a perfect age.
I don't know if I've told this story so many times that everyone's like, yes, we know Jason, but probably, but George Lucas is from Modesto where Eric and I are from. And he first did American Graffiti, which was about these kids and one who wanted to get out of town. I think Richard Dreyfuss or Ron Howard that was just aching to get out of there because it was such a nothing place. And then he did Star Wars with this dry desert planet and Luke wanting to go off and have adventures. And I really just think Tatooine is a stand-in for Modesto where we grew up. It's a place that you want to get away from.
Yeah.
Have adventures. I really have a very clear first Star Wars memory, even though I was so young. And that is watching Merv Griffin, which was an old talk show on kind of like Johnny Carson in the 70s. And I think I know Mark Hamill was on. I think it was also Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford. But what I remember for sure is they played a clip and it was the scene right after they escaped the Death Star. They went in and rescued Princess Leia and they were on their way out in the Millennium Falcon. And a couple of TIE fighters followed them out and they all got in their gunner stations, you know, Luke and Han, and they were spinning around, shooting them down. And then just the what really stood out to me, not only was like, holy crap, this is so cool. I've never seen anything like this space battle before, but the actors, the way they were so energetic about it. Yeah, I got him. You know, it really stood the feel of it, which I still think is one of the special things that made Star Wars work so well and why the prequels were like, what is going on here? Cause that was totally missing, you know, came back for, Force Awakens. That was one of the best things about it. That just that excitement, you know, and I was so like transfixed, like, what the hell is this? I need to go see this. And then my Aunt Vicky took me to see it in the theater, see the movie.
So cool. Very cool. Jonathan, great question, man. I really enjoyed hearing all of these four or three other stories. Really good stuff.
It's cool.
But I could never work out in that scene, Jason, when they went to go into the gunners and they're all standing upright and then they both go up and down. And there's some weird gravity thing that happens where they're on opposite sides of each other. One should be upside down.
And I've always like what happened? Localized gravity, you know, artificial gravity in different orientations.
There are things about the science in certain Star Wars things that I will never understand, including this episode. So we might get to that.
Good transition. All right. So this week it's Book of Boba Fett season 1, episode 4, The Gathering Storm. In general, what did you think of this one, Jonathan?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, after last week, I was a bit worried, and we still had a little moment with the Vespers for Mos Espa. Sorry, Jason. I still
joke there. I'm glad someone made the joke. Thank you.
Yeah,
but I love this. I thought we were back on track, and I thought that it was just a great Star Wars episode, and it felt very Star Wars-y. The humor, the setups, the laser fights again. And, you know, I thought it was great. Very happy.
Sweet. Eric?
Yeah, me too. You know, getting away from the colorful bikes and all that was definitely good, even though we got to see some more of them. But, you know, Gritty, we got to, you know, we've been talking about it this whole season about his motivations and his desire to build a tribe and all that kind of stuff. And we get to see all that and some cool revenge moments. But I really liked it as well.
I would more or less agree. It took me 2 watches to warm up a little bit more to it. I was a little lukewarm on the first one, but I did like it quite a bit. And it felt like a good transition episode in a way. It kind of finally made it clear to me anyways, what's going on and what this show actually is. And I appreciate it for that more than anything. So I did like it. It just took 2 tries.
Yeah, I saw someone arguing that maybe this series would have worked better if they didn't do the whole back and forth time periods and just told it in chronological order, because then as he's trying to become this crime lord, we would have a pretty clear sense of
understanding
why he was doing it. Yeah, and I was like, yeah, maybe so. And then we wouldn't have to think, oh, another back to tank scene. but anyway, I liked it too. Definitely better than last week. I thought the stuff getting his ship back was a little childish. I'm kind of sensitive to the Disneyfication stuff now, but once there was some really good edgy stuff after that made me just kind of like the whole episode better. So I liked it.
It is funny that the Disneyfication stuff in this one for some reason bothered me a little bit more than it did last week. I know you thought it was really bad last week, but you know, the bits in the kitchen there I didn't like very much at all, and that's why I think it took me to the second watch to be able to put that out of my head a little bit and focus on the stuff that I really did like.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to just not do the top 3, but I'll do my whole lore and callbacks thing when you guys, and I'll just like pop in whenever.
Just
do
some kind of taking the night off, it sounds like, eh?
Kind of. I got COVID, man. That's my excuse.
There you go.
So, Jonathan, would you like to go first?
Yeah, I'm going to go for a big one straight up. Was the return of Slave One, one of the classic ships in all of Star Wars. And it was just so nice to see it back, and like, what a shape. And that scene where he takes out the motorcycle gang and just went from dark to the bright to light of the desert. And I just saw the bike gang riding along, and I sat up very excited. I'm like, oh, I know what's happening. I know what's going to happen. And then this little spot of Slave One in the background getting bigger and bigger. And then it was brutal Boba Fett at his best, just taking these guys out. And if it's a video game, I want to play that video game.
Oh, yeah. You know what, man? That single scene was actually probably my favorite scene in the whole episode because of the way it was staged and the way the ship started off small in the sky and just came up behind them and then was like looming large over them as it was just mowing them down with the guns. I loved that so much. And it was so fun to watch him fly that ship, even though we saw it. We've seen it lots of times and we saw it in The Mandalorian. It just felt so much more exciting here for some reason. And the way he took them out was incredible.
Yeah. It was time for him to, you know, pull the trigger. And this is definitely one of those moments where revenge was just, and just wiping them out was just so cool.
Yeah. I loved it.
Except later on, Fennec Shan says, a group of bikers taking out, what did she say?
Taking out the Tuscans.
Yes. That doesn't seem like they could. Highly unlikely. So that made me think, okay, then I was saying last week, I wonder if the Pikes framed them and put the symbol down, but the Pikes were actually the one who did it, in which case Boba Fett just killed a bunch of bikers for no reason.
For no reason.
We're just cruising along.
Maybe the one time he should have shown restraint in this whole series. I thought it was a badass scene, though, and I was thankful. I mean, I hate that, but I'm finally, finally some murder. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, exactly.
We've been waiting 4 episodes for him to kill somebody. At least he did it.
But the sound effects of the ship, the sound of the of Slave One's laser engine, blasters, and the engine, and then I'm sure someone's going to bring up the Sarlacc pit later, but I must say the seismic charge is the best sound effect in all of Star Wars, I think.
So cool. And I just love the way they framed the ship glass first, that big glass pane that's the front of it, if it's situated the right way, coming down over almost like an eclipse over the whole, looking up from inside the Sarlacc
pit.
Yeah, and you see their faces. That was just really a cool visual, even though I thought it was kind of dumb of them to get so close, but
it was really cool. Let's have a look down.
Yeah, let's really get down its throat and see what's in there. Right.
That's where I started to think to myself, what I hinted at earlier about the way things work, though. I do not understand how these ships work with anti-gravity or thrusters or something. If it can just sort of hover over the, like that, and then reverse back up somehow, like, I do not get it, but I also don't care that much.
Well, I don't either, but you see so many floating things in Star Wars that maybe it's like, you know, things can hover and float, but you really need the thrusters to like go to hyperspace or whatever.
I guess it's something like that. You're right. Everything does float, you know, so
it is. And there is an anti-gravity thing that must just cancel out gravity, you know, the opposite of the weight and mass of the object is just able to sit there.
Yeah.
But watching that profile shot of the Slave One, as it just tilted as they're peering down into the Sarlacc pit, it was like a person looking down there, very, very personified. And that scene moving on was just fantastic. It was so, remind me of Jaws. There was real tension. There was a real kind of suspense in it. And that was great.
And when Fennec Shand undoes her seatbelt and gets right on the glass and you see the Sarlacc beak come out right at her, that was really cool too.
Reminded me of when, what was it? Didn't the Razor Crest at some point have some big? Oh no, maybe it was in the
ice.
Oh yeah, the first
episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Creature bites onto its engine or its leg.
Right. Right. Actually, you know what? I might have been thinking of in the Solo movie, when the Millennium Falcon had the Rathtar on the front of it as they shot out of there. Anyways, reminded me of that a little bit too.
Empire Strikes Back when they go down in the
with the
asteroid.
They come out of
in the belly.
They come out of the asteroid.
Of course.
Yeah.
Huh. Common thing in this universe, apparently. Hey, what did
it all rhymes.
What did you guys think about the fact that they aren't using the name Slave One anymore? They referred to this ship
as the Fire Spray.
Fire Spray gunship, which is what type of the ship is, rather than the name.
Mm-hmm. I understand in this day and age, it's just one of those things. But I will always refer to it as Slave One. But I'm glad they didn't rename it. They just kind of glossed over it and might not even refer to it as that.
Yeah. They've changed the labeling of the toys.
Yeah. It's a Disneyfication again.
And I was looking back to see why was it named Slave One. I'm just curious. And nobody knows for sure, but they're in the what's now Legends continuity, so it's not no longer canon, but was because this used to be Jango Fett's ship, you know, Boba Fett's father, and he was a slave at one point. So maybe he named it just in commemoration of his own having been a slave, but that's speculation. But it's a cool name, and I'm like you, Jonathan. I can understand why Disney might not want to focus on that, but I think it's a cool name for a ship.
I mean, I don't know if I was just naive, but I never even really associated that name, you know, with
absolutely
slavery
or not.
Like that. No. Yeah. I mean, and again, yeah, I agree with Jonathan that it will be Slave One.
I certainly never, as a kid, never associated it. Obviously, when you're an adult, you do. And I'm glad they didn't rename it. But like you guys, I'm okay with them not using it. And I don't even think that's a Disneyfication thing. It's just, if that's the kind of thing that's upsetting to some people, I don't feel like we're losing much by not using it.
No.
Especially because they didn't make a point to just randomly rename it. That would have felt a little disingenuous. But I think calling it a Firespray gunship is kind of a cool name too. So
I agree.
All right.
Who wants to go next? Eric, how about you?
Pretty sure. This is kind of playing off, Jonathan, what you said about the sonic bomb, but, and this isn't necessarily specific to this episode, but I love the sounds, you know, the speeder bike sounds, the fire spray Slave One coming in, the laser blasts. There's just so many great sounds, and I can't get enough of it. That bomb for sure is right up there. There's actually a show, or not a show, but a thing on Disney Plus called Galaxies of Sounds, or Sounds of Star Wars, or something like that, where you could just play it and it's just all the awesome sounds of, you know, TIE fighters and lightsabers and, you know, speeder bikes flying by. I just love that. So that was one of my cool moments.
Star Wars sound design is definitely top notch, and
for sure
the noises of the Slave One are amazing. I mean, and from day one, lightsabers, like how cool are lightsabers sound wise? You know, it's just you can't go wrong.
This guy Ben Burtt is the main guy behind all that. You see him in all the making of movies, and he took, I think it was like a telephone cable coming down into the ground, and smacked it with a hammer, and it made the laser sound. How the hell does he do that? And just like George Lucas, he got the great actors, freaking John Williams doing the score, guys like this, Ben Burtt. He picked the right talent to make it really special. But yeah, Ben Burtt is a genius.
Yeah. I actually, someone played a note on a guitar, just snapped a guitar string, and that sounds like where they got the seismic charge from.
Dang. That's awesome.
Yeah, it feels very sonic, like vibration kind of thing.
I could do it all over again, I think going into like sound design, sound creation would be a really cool job. Like just go out and figure out ways to make those kind of sound effects and stuff.
Yeah, every time I've seen any, you know, movie that has behind the scenes stuff where they show how they make sounds, or they're crunching up, you know, lettuce, or punching meat to be punches, and you know, I don't see how you could not have a good time.
Who doesn't
want
to go into the butcher and just punch meat all day?
Like, yeah, no, exactly. I wonder how this will sound.
I'm glad they're still using the donkey bray for the tuskins.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Now that sonic charge, as far as I know, it's only been used twice before. Once was in, I think, Attack of the Clones. I think it was when Obi-Wan was chasing him around space, was it?
Yeah.
Used it on him?
Yep.
And then the other time was in The Mandalorian when they went to try to find the, they had to find an ATM terminal to find the code so they'd know where Moff Gideon's ship was, and they were escaping that, and some TIE fighters were chasing him out, and he used it again. Super cool.
But I did wonder at the time when they used it in the Sarlacc pit whether they were too close to the seismic charge, because that thing puts out a lot of force, but I guess it only goes in one direction, horizontally.
Yeah. And maybe just being kind of underground would help.
Unless there was a TIE fighter right above, then it would destroy that.
Completely blow it up.
I did have to look up underground nuclear tests to see if this was possible, then yes.
Okay, I thought it was a little strange, though, how it just kind of popped out of the hole and then rolled off the ship and fell in. Like, if that was in space, it would, like, shoot out at something, right? But I guess there's a different button for making it fall out.
I think they release it and it just gets left behind. And so it's almost like a sea mine.
Okay, that makes sense. That works. Yeah. All right.
That's what we're going with.
I haven't thought about this at all.
Clearly not.
What about you, Chris?
Okay, well, my first one is really that I just appreciated how much this did feel like a bit of a transition episode that finally kind of revealed what was going on this show, at least in broad strokes. And when Boba Fett wakes up out of the Bacta tank, you know, that droid even says, "You are now completely healed." So yeah. I'm like, he's healed. We're gonna move past that. We're gonna move on to something else now.
Just in time for them to finish his story.
Exactly. Just in time. But you know, we get some insight into Boba Fett's mindset, which I know we've been getting throughout all the episodes, but I feel like now he finally has a clear goal, which is really good. You know, but he says to Fennec that he's tired of working for idiots who are gonna let him or gonna get him killed. He's not going to be like bounty hunting anymore. He wants to try to do this from the other side is kind of the way I saw it. You know, he learned a lot from the Tuskens. He wants to have a tribe and a family of his own. And I saw someone online refer to Boba Fett as becoming the thinking man's gangster, which I really appreciated, actually. He's going to not do this from a really ruthless standpoint, as we know he's going to try to do it from a standpoint of respect. But I liked all of that. And, you know, he wants to try to resolve issues before it turns out into wars or fights and everybody gets killed unnecessarily, which I know seems a little bit soft for Boba Fett, but balance that with the mowing down of the biker gang and we fall somewhere in the middle. So
yeah, that was a perfect balance, right?
It worked, I think. Yeah. And again, now I feel like I have a much better idea of where this is going and kind of why and how it's getting there, you know, leading towards this showdown with the Pike Syndicate and so on. And we see the first steps of him preparing for this battle. So like all of that, I thought worked really well for me. And it felt like the show came together a little bit more narratively for me. Mm. And I appreciated all that. And I'm sort of looking forward to how it plays out in the last three. And I hope it's awesome. And I think it will be.
Yeah.
I think we can all sort of identify with being like, my managers are all idiots. I can totally do a better job.
Yeah. That must have happened a lot.
I am a manager. I'm sure lots of people think about me like that.
Oh, God. That's Eric. Yeah, don't put out a suggestion box.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, I was going to say I liked that we saw him, how he felt so much regret, you know, about leading the Tuskens to their demise. You know, I thought that was a cool moment to see how he felt about that. It made the him mowing down the biker gang just a little bit more, as long as they were the ones that did it. Cool. So
yeah, he certainly, regrets, I guess, letting that happen to the Tuskens, but I think he took away so much from that experience, you know, in that,
yeah, for sure.
You need other people. And I guess violence isn't always the only way. Sometimes it's the way, but, I don't know. All that stuff, you need a tribe and all that stuff with them is just more in context now and makes more sense to me than when we were seeing it. And this comes back to what you said, Jason, earlier. Maybe if it had played out chronologically rather than back and forth, it might have worked a little bit better. But ultimately, you get to the same place, and it's okay.
I actually have enjoyed the flashbacks, really, especially with the back to tank to signify that it's happening. So there's no kind of there's no question of when you're in flashback mode or not. But it really reminds me of The Godfather 2, which had which was the ultimate in flashbacks. You know,
It is a good mechanic for flipping back and forth, right? In the back to tank or not?
It's also like The Godfather in that it really is like the mafia, you know.
Yeah,
like we were like last week when we were talking about, don't they have people that do all these functions and everything? And I'm like, if he's really kind of like a mafia leader, then most of the people that he needs are, as he said this week, the muscle. That's all he needs, you know, and he gets to sort of make the rules and then make sure that, I mean, in the mafia, it's a protection racket because you're kind of just protecting everyone from yourself. Hurting them, but you're also protecting them. You're guard defending your territory so the other rival mob leaders don't come in. And and here, that's kind of what he's providing, is protection from other bad guys,
these outsized forces.
He's like mediating. He's mediating between the people in that sector of Mos Espa or whatever, so that they can not hurt each other or take advantage of each other, so they can, you know, that's basically, I think, his role. I mean, basically he's like the police, except there are no police there.
And when the authorities, like the mayor, are so obviously corrupt, you have a balancing of the local crime lord to keep things straight so people don't get killed. There's crime and intimidation and all of that, but no one's getting hurt.
Although he did allow, or he didn't say anything when, you know, when that trans showed, or the, yeah, the trans surgeon guy said that he was, you know, making a lot of money running Spice. So it wasn't like he was shutting any of that stuff down. However, you know, they were obviously making money from it. And
he's telling all these crime leaders, I don't want to horn in on your territory. That still is like, okay, how much of this is just ripping people off, or, you know, I don't know. I think a little spice is all right every once in a while.
Everyone
needs a little.
Friday night here.
Exactly.
I did think that that arrangement that he came to with those other regional leaders was a little strange, though, right? He asked for their help and they said no, and he said, all right, fine, I'll do it alone, but just leave me alone, like, stay neutral, don't double cross me. I thought maybe he could have been a little more heavy handed there and try to get them on his side.
It came pretty quick. It came pretty quick. It was like, help me, guys, okay, I'll do it for myself, you know. It was like instant.
But, well, I mean, basically he just wanted them to not be swayed by the Pike if the Pike tried to bring them over,
right?
That was his main thing, and they promised to, but, you know,
like, don't work.
She asked him if
against him.
Yeah, don't work against me. And I think the rancor was supposed to be a little bit of intimidation there.
The intimidation that.
And I don't know if this will happen, but these series really like to refer to old movies like the Magnificent Seven, Seven of the Samurai, and just do that story. And so I'm now wondering, because it's mirroring quite closely The Godfather 2, even with the spies so having no drugs. And so, and in Godfather 2, they said, just leave me alone. We know we want to keep our things. And I wonder if in the end, there's going to be a Boba Fett moment where he takes out all the other families.
Oh, yeah, right.
That'd be cool. I could watch that.
it could be the kind of twist they're working towards, actually, right?
Yeah. If
they give us this deal where he's like, fine, I'll do it myself, but stay out of my way. Well, maybe he's got other plans. Yeah, good call.
Yeah.
I think the series needs something like that, because if you go online and read what people are saying, they're kind of bored with it. Not everyone, but a lot of people. And they're like, couldn't we have just seen Boba Fett going around hunting down criminals on Coruscant or something? And I'm kind of like, yeah, that would have been pretty cool.
it's a thing out there. I mean, the audience ratings for this show are much lower than many other Disney Plus shows, recent ones anyways, by a significant amount. So people are feeling that, I think. So you're right.
Yeah. I think there's a decent chance these last few episodes could really up the game of the show, but we'll see.
Absolutely, yeah.
And but is this a standard level of engagement and the Mandalorian is just getting the Baby Yoda bump?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Well, Baby Yoda is a huge bump for sure. But even compared to Hawkeye and Loki and WandaVision, like they're all 20% higher generally than Boba Fett. Yeah.
I think if we see Boba Fett riding around on a Rancor eating the other captains, I think that might get a ratings boost.
Might just do it right there. Yeah, 100%.
Okay, let's move on to our second one. Jonathan?
Let's go. And surprisingly, I really liked Jabba's kitchen. I love the kitchen scene. First off, when it started with the drone going up and mapping Jabba's palace,
that
tiny little dough, that was very cool. And the map that it produced kind of reminded me of the Star Wars video game, The Force Unleashed. When you go to the map section, it's very similar to the map that it produced. But I couldn't help but love the droid chef. And I thought it was a great addition to the droids. I thought it was hilarious. And I thought it was classic Star Wars humor. No, it wasn't like the prank phone calls in the Last Jedi. I thought it was like quirky and funny, and it was just a little aside, a break from the tension of the main story. And like when that little Muppet animal tried to get out of the pot and they just whacked it with the spoon.
Whacked it back
in. Just a little quick asides. But I thought that the design of the chef droid was amazing. And when he went into full General Grievous mode, I thought it was fantastic.
And just last week, we were like, who makes all the food? R5D chef or something?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Now we know.
Where did they get the salad from? It looked like they just got the Whole Foods and got a bag of salad and took it out.
Yeah.
And then
there's no water, but they can grow all these veggies.
Yeah. And then the rat catcher, the rabbit droid, I thought it was really funny, which surprised me because I kind of, prefer a darker action side. But the rabbit droid just walking in, oblivious to everything, wandering around and then getting chased around and then in a panic switching himself off was great, I thought.
Like I said, I was just a little sensitive about Disneyfication, and that stuff came before we got the edgier stuff in the last half. And so I was like, oh, man. But then when we got the edgier stuff, it made me appreciate that stuff more. Like, okay, it's not all like this. Like you said, if it's a kind of a little fun relief from the tenser moments, then it's cool. But if it's just all like that, then it's like, oh, I don't know. But anyway, yeah.
Those droids actually have showed up in Clone Wars, both the mouse one and the chef one.
Oh, have they? The chef one?
So we've seen them.
Oh,
yeah.
And the chef one, I think it was also in Attack of the Clones. When Anakin and Padme are on some ship or something. I can't remember for sure.
Yeah.
That's
easily forgettable.
The glaze over when those two are on together.
Yeah.
I think I can appreciate the sort of Star Wars humor element to it, but I didn't love that part. I thought the chef was kind of cool, but then why would he have this like attack mode? He's a chef, I was just like, come on. And then the little rat catcher rabbit thing, it was a bit too cheesy for me or something. I don't know, but I do get it.
Like, oh, I hear you.
It falls in line with some other Star Wars type humor, which makes me conflicted a little bit, but I don't know. I didn't love that part. The thing that I thought was the funniest of the whole thing was I had the subtitles on when I watched it the second time, and it said it was labeling who the characters were. It said droid chef and droid sous chef, the other guy. And I'm just like, I don't know. That's funny. I wonder if that's like the subtitler doing that or who decides to call them that.
But right.
I don't know. It was that I found entertaining.
But it reminded me of the from the engineer of the train.
Yes.
And in that area of things, which I really love the engineer of the train. I don't know. I normally don't like that sort of thing, but I have in these, which surprises me.
Yeah.
Give me a lightsaber duel anytime, but
I'd like to have a droid chef at home.
Oh
my gosh.
I'd take that for sure.
And I don't know how much more efficient it would be to have six knives and cleavers rather than just one.
Just one.
Get it done quicker.
Yeah.
Yep. Eric?
Well, we already talked about, you know, one of mine, and it was definitely, you know, Boba mowing down the biker gang. But let's see, I liked Kersantan, you know, getting all pissed off at the Transjodan.
I think it's Trandoshan.
There we go. Yeah, but I thought that was cool. And then that, you know, that whole scene where we kind of got a little bit of confirmation from some of the stuff that I had read about with him in the comic books with the gladiator, yeah. You know, his gladiator days. And then we got to see him rip somebody's arm out of their socket, which was pretty awesome. I thought she was going to be able to talk him down and then it's like, arm.
No, arm off.
I was sitting there going, do it, do it, do it.
Yep.
Yes, you did it. Well, the best part about
no blood.
No blood at all.
Yeah.
The best part about that for me was, though, she says, if you leave him alone, I'll forgive your bar tab. And he decides, I'd rather pay the tab and rip his arm off.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Yeah, ripped his arm off. Here's your freaking money.
Here's the money. Yeah,
our friend Michelle on Facebook was saying, "Oh, why?" Like after last week's episode, she's like, "This show seems really violent for Star Wars." And I'm like, "What do you mean? In the first Star Wars, Ben Kenobi chops a dude's arm off in a bar just for being salty."
Yeah,
I remember as a kid being like, yeah. "Oh my god."
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Han shoots some guy just out of the blue.
Yeah.
Right, I know.
First.
Right.
Yep.
Chris?
All right, well, sort of following from my other point, we are leading towards this showdown, some sort of battle with the Pike Syndicate, and I feel like Boba Fett has been amassing a team. He's putting a team together in a way, amassing a cast of heroes for this. And so obviously he's got himself and Fennec. They've been together from the beginning.
The Power Rangers.
Well, yeah, we've got the Power Rangers, the Vespa gang. He's got a couple of Gamorreans, at least two. I don't know if he's got any more. Now he's got the Wookiee, Kersantan, on his side.
Awesome.
Very cool. Yeah. I thought maybe he just hired him to like look over, like watch over that meeting.
Like be the muscle.
But I think he's
for that one thing.
For the one thing. But I think he's going to be part of it going forward.
I hope so.
He's got a Rancor, which is pretty useful, it sounds like. And you never know. I thought maybe he might have a few leftover Tuskens. He, you know, if there are some around, I wouldn't be surprised if they show up to sort of fight on his behalf. And of course, the thing none of us have brought up yet, and is probably everybody's number one point, but he obviously has the Mandalorian about to show up some point in the next three episodes to help out as well. And I think
Say why you think that.
Well, I think that because they were talking about where to hire muscle, and as soon as she said that, we play the Mandalorian theme as the episode ends.
Yep.
And it was amazing. Like, I loved I forgot how much I loved that music, actually. When I heard it, I started to get chills, like, oh, good, he's coming back, you know?
Yes.
But having said that, that's what I want to talk about a little bit, because I'm really pumped for it. I think it's going to be cool, but I hope it doesn't mean that this whole Boba Fett show was just kind of a filler in between seasons of The Mandalorian. Right. I don't want the last three episodes to this show to become all about Mando and have it sort of be Boba Fett's like secondary leading. Again, because this is supposed to be his show. And it's,
I don't think it's going to do that.
Well, I'm worried. I'm worried that they're bringing him in just to either set up season three of The Mandalorian, which they might do, but I just think it'll be a missed opportunity to really finally give us a great Boba Fett story if they overshadow it with the Mandalorian coming back at the end here. So I think it's an awesome cast of characters that he's assembled. I hope they pull off a great ending, but I want it to be about Boba Fett. I don't want them to sort of not do Boba Fett proud in his own show. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Even though I'm super excited.
I think it's going to be just like how Boba Fett was on The Mandalorian. He made an entrance. But then he was sort of secondary through the rest, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like I hoped so too. If it just became the Mando show, I wouldn't like that. We got three more episodes. I really feel like Jon Favreau wants to really flesh out the character of Boba Fett, you know?
And that's what I hope. And he deserves it, right?
He
and
does
that's
deserve
what we,
it.
That's what we all came here yeah. for, you know? And it's taken a little bit of time, but I think we're getting there finally. And I just don't want them to undercut themselves by throwing in Mandalorian, who everybody loves. And everyone was, you know, that show, again, people loved it and they're looking forward to the next season. If they can have him drop in, help out somehow, and if there's some little setup for whatever's coming next on his show, great. But mm-hmm. make sure that this one ends strong with Boba Fett and they don't do him dirty.
What if he doesn't even, what if that was just a lie? And Mandalorian doesn't even show up.
I mean, A, it's not. So.
Music in Star Wars tells the story.
Yes.
Yep. Like, I remember 50%. When. Yeah. I remember when young Anakin came on, and there was just a little background, little sting of the Imperial March you could hear.
Yeah.
When right. they first mm-hmm. introduced Anakin. And so, like, yes, if they're playing the Mandalorian theme, the Mandalorian is yeah. on his way.
What if they? What if Fennec Shand said, "We need more muscle," and then you hear, "Ding, ding, 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 ding."
You know,
he'd be waiting for Mario.
I guess he would. Oh,
okay. It was also
shows up. Why not just bring on Superman and everybody?
But there was another little sting of the Mandalorian theme when they're in the desert at night and you saw the flares going.
The flares flashing, yeah. yeah.
There mm-hmm. was just a little bit mm-hmm. when that happened.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I picked that up the second time and I really appreciated that because it was tying it together. But here, what about this, guys? What if Mando does come, but he shows up with Katie Sackhoff? What's her character again?
Bo-Katan,
yeah.
What if he shows up with a couple of them? And so it's not just him. And so yeah. it's sort of like the team of Mandalorians show up and help out. And it's not just
I think that would be
Mando.
Cool.
I think so, too. I think that would be fun and help, you know, just help with the spread of the characters a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to see a Star Wars battle. Like in the prequels, the greatest moment was when I saw all the Jedi's in full force, in full flight, you know, a bunch of. So I would love to see. You know, all the Mandalorians, you know, several of them in sets of armor, different ships, a big, big battle would be awesome.
Like an Avengers Assemble yeah. moment, you know?
That would
without
Jedi's
the hero
Assemble!
Yeah. That'd be fun.
All right, on to the third point, Jonathan.
Okay, so I have to talk about it. I wasn't here last week, but the... What am I calling it? The pampered Brooklynites from NYU that are somehow in Star Wars all of a sudden. I find that like when they went to the mod parlor. When it's written, it sounds great. Like, you know, cyborg, you know, parts of machine, very Star Wars, Luke Skywalker. They all Darth Vader all have parts of machine in them, but I really don't think this is landing with these guys. You know, and it just feels really awkward. And the mod doc was the musician Thundercat. And I'm just like, why does this guy look so weird? And why are they doing like these awkward close-ups of him? And it turns out that he's a musician famous and a guy. Famous guy. And it was kind of like the Ed Sheeran moment from Game of Thrones for me. It just kind of, it all took me out of it. And I'm just weird. Like, who are these people? They look so kind of young and soft and like their mods were just stuck on with a bit of crazy glue. And and it didn't look like they would survive an hour in the jungle and waste, you know, let alone be hardened gang members on the outskirts of Mos Espa.
Yeah, I think that's why they don't fit. You know, I would expect those kind of guys to be, you know, in Coruscant or
right.
yeah.
in one of the big cities.
Right.
They can't even afford water. How do they afford
right.
cybernetic
and implants? How do they, yeah. And how do they keep their Vespas clean? I yeah. mean,
so shiny.
Not washing them.
And I get it's a throwback to American Graffiti and all of that, yeah. but But sometimes, you know, Easter eggs are too much and it just becomes, I think that was referencing American Graffiti is just, they just don't feel like they're in the same world, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, Star Wars has done this a few times. I mentioned last week during the pod race, those announcers, you know?
Yeah.
It just takes
and the
you
diner
right
guy.
Out of it.
Yeah, the diner guy.
Yeah, the
guy
diner guy, would, yes.
I'm like, what the hell is going on here? But if they tried, if they try to pull this stuff in Kenobi, I'm going to lose it because Kenobi has to be.
Yeah. I don't like any of that. I mean, I liked the Ewoks as a kid a lot, but I think that comes a little close to that maybe, but no, I mean, this is more just like taking something from our culture and putting it into Star Wars.
Yeah, the Ewoks are a species. Like they're an alien species. You can buy into that. These are humans that
right.
don't fit in and or no, humans that feel like they're behaving in a way that's from our real world culture, but in a Star Wars twist and it doesn't work.
When Luke got his robot hand, we didn't really, I don't think, get to see. We saw him like, I'm moving my fingers like he did, and you could see the gears going in his wrist.
The mechanics inside.
And, but it did, even with Fennec Shand, I went back and looked, and the episode in Mandalorian when she came back with Boba Fett, it was when the Mandalorian took Baby Yoda to this planet Tython because he needed to go to this certain rock where he could try to reach out to a Jedi, and he was sitting there, and then Boba Fett and Fennec Shand landed because they wanted to get Boba Fett's armor back from Mandalorian. Anyway, during that segment, Fennec Shand, because he was surprised to see her alive because he thought she was dead, she raised her shirt or whatever and garment and showed all her mechanical stomach, you know? So, but that feels like something out of Star Wars. People have mechanical parts all the time.
Yeah.
But when you have this mod shop, I mean, first off, it's all grimy like Star Wars always is, but when you have this person who's dying and you need to open up their stomach, you think it should be a sterile environment.
Right. Right.
It just seemed cheesy. They're the whole thing I felt was cheesy.
Big droid parts.
Yeah,
and
big droid hand. I don't buy that he's saving her life. How, this guy is supposed to be like a tattoo parlor for cool teens. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, that's the thing.
We need cool teens.
I equate it to like a tattoo parlor. That's exactly what I thought. And I'm like, do you take someone who needs life-saving surgery to a tattoo parlor or some some like back alley doctor, right? It doesn't. Yeah. You know,
I guess
work.
That was the only option, but their delivery was just so glib and real world. Like Star Wars is known as a space opera, and like Boba Fett, all his deliveries are very like this, and you know he's very declarative. But these guys are just throwing out quips, and it just annoyed me. But it was very short this time. And so it's fine.
Why didn't you start with that big bag of money? It's like, I mean,
right. Yeah.
And then they do these kind of looks to camera where they're like these weird close-ups where they're almost saying, look, do you recognize this guy?
I didn't recognize him. I don't know who that is, but I also thought it stood out and didn't work.
I knew it was someone and something was happening. And then I find out it's some musician. He's famous.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep, because I didn't know Ed Sheeran when I saw that Game of Thrones episode, but I'm like, what's going on here? There's something weird.
Just like they're almost like there's this halo light on them, you know, or someone's going, look at him, look
at this guy.
Look who we got.
And I feel that happened with the girl from Yellow Jackets as well. They had these odd close-ups of her as well. I don't know, just even though I didn't recognize her, I felt there was a different treatment of them as in the show.
I mean, I'm just wondering because of that, is she going to have a bigger part going forward or something, you know?
Yeah, maybe. I think they call it stunt casting, right? Where they put someone in sort of in a cameo that you're supposed to recognize and be like, oh, I know that person. But it's just annoying most of the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. I mean, there were a ton of Game of Thrones cameos where they didn't do that.
Yeah.
They didn't call attention to it. And then you hear later, oh, that was from some heavy metal band or something. And okay, cool. I mean, it's fun to know that, but not be taken out of the moment because of it, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that Ed Sheeran one. It felt like everyone was sitting around hoping he was going to, you know, play some music, and all the characters in Game of Thrones knew it was like a modern day pop star.
All right, where are we, Eric?
We've kind of covered most of my points. I mean, I was going to mention the music, the Mando music, kind of with the sound, but I felt like it deserved its own spot. But I can't wait. I definitely hope that there's going to be some big throwdown and we get to see them all kick some ass. So for sure.
I wonder if he's going to have the Darksaber.
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
Oh, yeah, right.
That would be crazy. Yeah.
Forgot all about that, but wouldn't be surprised.
I love the music. I've found myself starting to hum the main theme as well, you know, away from the show. And it kind of reminds me of Skyrim, some of the background music in Skyrim, and like the male choir, I think, is amazing. And just another point I wanted to bring up was with the music when they're having the meeting of the families. Of the families, they had a kind of Star Wars version of the Godfather theme it felt like as well. Yeah.
Heavily influenced this episode, I'd say.
Yeah, for sure. I'd say.
Well, that's a good thing. It's okay.
Yeah, sure.
Chris?
I guess the last one sort of leads off of the mod shop a little bit. And, you know, you guys mentioned it a bit. I really didn't like that hand thing that the... I don't know, the tattoo doctor, whatever he was, mod doctor had.
Tattoo doctor.
Looked pretty clumsy.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's like Edward Scissorhands or something.
Yeah.
Right, you can change it up and stuff like that. It's funny because it got me thinking about, there was a couple of times in this episode where those sorts of things bothered me. That was one of them, but it reminded me of like R2 plugging into a port, right? With his little thing that comes out and sticks in. Like that looks kind of cheesy too, but for some reason that doesn't bother me at all. Whereas this guy's like scissor hands, I thought was so stupid. And I don't know if it's because...
It's because you have a woman who's on the verge of death and you know her body is open on a table. Her guts would be spilling out.
There were no guts. There was no blood anywhere, yet she was wide open. Right. Whatever. But I don't know. I don't mind R2's little probe that comes out or...
It's just like a USB plug.
BB-8 has little probe has stuff too, you know,
or his little shock,
right? Exactly,
shock thing that he has. But
this
right?
looks so stupid. The other crappy effect I thought in this episode was the close-up shots of the bantha that he was riding.
Oh yeah.
The way it's like lips and mouth looked, I was like, come on.
It looked like out of Dark Crystal or something.
It looked terrible. Yeah. And
that Muppet show.
And I started wondering, like, are they going for almost like the look of some of the practical effects in the original trilogy? Because some of them look crappy, but
that's what I'm starting to think is like they are trying to copy the practical effects from the original series. Mm-hmm. But when they did that in 1977, they were trying to make it look realistic.
Yeah.
And
it was new.
Yeah.
It was new.
And whereas if they did the bantha where it was practical, but tried to make it as good as possible and as real as possible, like some of the Jurassic Park practical effects,
it'd
be great. But I think what's weird is they're trying to make it look slightly crappy to reference the original.
Right. Mimic. And it doesn't.
That tongue was, you could see the arm in that tongue.
I'm on the fence about that because, you know, the little guy, I forget his name, but in Jabba's palace, he goes,
Salacious
the little puppet. Yeah. And they showed him or one of his race in Mandalorian, like being barbecued.
Oh, I love that.
And it was the same thing, you know, it's a little puppet. So I'm like, yeah, they got to use the same puppet. I'm okay with that, I guess. But here, it did seem a little bit too crappy, I guess, especially the tongue.
Yeah.
And the lips were too big.
The lips were too big. And, like, I'm not going to say the thing is supposed to be like an elephant or a woolly mammoth or whatever, but, like, they didn't need big, weird lips. Like, if they made it look more like an elephant, I actually would have been okay. But, anyways, I didn't like those. On the other hand, though, a lot of the digital effects are amazing. We talked all about the Slave One and how it looked incredible all the time and stuff like that. I thought that little mini probe droid, I mean, yeah, it's just a little mini hovering droid, but looked cool. I may question the feasibility of it again, but I thought it looked amazing.
Yeah, with the glowing red lights, exactly. Like they wouldn't see that. You know, if it didn't have the lights or it turned them off at least when it flew in,
like
I would
go
be
into
a
dark mode
more,
or something.
Okay with it. Right.
So I don't know. Weird practical effects, really amazing digital effects. And what can you do?
Some good practical too, though. Like, I think the Wookiee looks amazing.
You're right. Yep. That's a good point. Some of that great stuff looks really great. It's just when they try to make it look bad, it does. Go figure.
Yeah.
You succeeded.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's all of everybody's points, right? So I'm going to do my lore and callbacks. So we found out the whole backstory of Boba Fett from the time that he fell into the Sarlacc pit all the way up through the current time period where he's trying to make it as a crime lord. So I thought I'd just sort of summarize that really quick. So he climbed out, his armor was stolen by Jawas and gotten some way off screen by Cobb Vanth. He says he bought them in a novel. It's more complicated than that. But anyway, Boba Fett's captured by the Tuskens, enslaved, but then kills this monster for them and earns their respect. And then they accept them as part of their tribe. They get a shot at by the Pikes on this train, so he steals some speeder bikes and trains them to fight back and stops the train and makes a deal with the Pikes not to harm the Tuskens. And then they, give him the drug. Maybe it was before that, but anyway, they're kind of accepting him into their tribe. But then when he goes to get protection payment from the Pikes, he returns to find that someone has killed all of the Tuskens. And that's what kind of made him feel like he wants a tribe, that whole experience. And he's tired of poor management from people like Darth Vader and Jabba the Hutt. Thinks he can do a better job himself. If the timeline is right, then that all took about 5 years. So maybe he spent more time with the Tuskens than it made it seem like.
And they showed.
Because Return of the Jedi takes place for ABY, which is after Battle of Yavin, and Mandalorian season one, when we first see Boba Fett with the Tuskens, is 9 ABY, 5 years later. Then we see him find Fennec Shand left for dead by the Mandalorian, as we saw in the Mandalorian. The flash that he sees go off, you kind of alluded to it earlier, but that was in the Mandalorian when he used the Mandalorian to blind Fennec Shand.
Players.
So he saves her. They go and get his ship, as we saw in this episode. Then he's looking for his armor and somehow traces it to Cobb Vanth. And actually, I kind of forgot what happened, but the Mandalorian got the armor.
Yeah, that's someone happened, someone right? told him
because they
where it was, and so Mando goes to get it first, and he does.
Yeah, and he kills the crate dragon, and I think he gets the armor as a payment. And then Mando follows him, finds out he got it, follows him to Tython. Then the Mandalorian, he tells him, that's my father's armor. Here's the chain code. My father was a foundling like you. So the Mandalorian gives him the armor back. In exchange, though, he's going to help get Baby Yoda back, who's been kidnapped by Moff Gideon. So he takes the Mandalorian to get the coordinates and then takes him to Moff Gideon's ship. And then we see at the end of The Mandalorian, Boba Fett and Fennec Shand go and kill Bib Fortuna and take over. And now we've seen him in the current timeline building his crew and trying to gain respect with everybody around Mos Espa and trying to track down these assassins who tried to kill him, and then finding out that the Pike wants to claim the territory. So that's basically everything from Return of the Jedi up till now, right?
Covered it all.
Yep.
when he takes Shan to this mod shop and the guy says, aren't you a little old to be here? I kind of wondered if that was a wink that Temuera Morrison is older than Boba Fett should be. I don't, maybe not. Maybe it's just like only young people get these mods, but
right.
Boba Fett was born in 32 BBY before Battle of Yavin, and it's 9 ABY now, so he should be 41 years old, but Morrison is 61. Looks pretty good for 61.
Yeah, I know.
Glad he slimmed down from the yes. from the Mandalorian, because the armor tends to fit a little bit better this time.
I agree. Yeah.
I know, because I remembered thinking, man, he really looks like he has a dad bod. But then watching him in this, I'm like, eh, he looks pretty good. Oh, yeah. So I went back and watched, and yeah, it's just like that armor is like a little tiny
like bulging
plate on his chest.
It's like Robert Baratheon.
He needs some more Beskar.
So he must have
a chest plate spreader. Yeah.
Maybe that's some good CG going on. I don't know. Chest plate spreader. So Boba Fett's ship is at Jabba's palace because he took Han Solo there. And I was not sure, why can't you just go get it? Like, once you get out of the Sarlacc pit, go get your ship. And Fennec Shand asks you, if the ship is yours, why don't you just ask for it back? And yeah. he says, because I might not like the answer without my armor, I'm less persuasive. Later, he says, I'm going to find my armor, then I'm going to kill that bloated pig who double-crossed me. That's Bib Fortuna. And take his throne, he says. So I'm like, oh, we didn't see Bib Fortuna double-cross Boba Fett. So I went and looked it up. There's a comic series that came out last year, 2021, called War of the Bounty Hunters, where they explain this, where Bib Fortuna sent bounty hunters to steal Han from Boba Fett before he could give him to Jabba, and then lied about it so he could take credit or something. And so it was actually other bounty hunters, according to this anyway, that delivered Han to Jabba. And so that's how he double-crossed him.
I mean, double crossed him.
That's a deep cut.
So
I don't know.
I think that was just an excuse to have a fight, you know?
Right.
Right.
Boba Fett's ship belonged to his father. He stole it while on a job. And they were fire spray attack crafts used to guard this prison planet. After Jango Fett died, Boba Fett claimed the ship and has more or less had it ever since. It was, known as Slave One. It's a modified ship. It has auxiliary sensors, enhanced shielding. You know, Jango Fett modified it, and Boba Fett too. It has an arsenal of added weapons, most of them hidden. It can jam signals and make itself so it can disappear from scanning systems. It has this deck situated on a gyro system so the occupants stay upright. We've seen that, of course. It has 6 chairs for passengers. It has 6 prisoner cages with immobilizing bunks to hold bounties, captured bounties. What else? So that's it for the ship. In the kitchen scene, we see the robot, the droid EV-929 from Return of the Jedi, where he tells R2 and C-3PO, I have need of you on the master sail barge. Here the chef droid says, what was that? And he says, I don't know, more rats, which I guess in Return of the Jedi, there were tons of rats.
We see some rats in
Jabba's palace. And the chef droid called COO Cook Droid appeared on Attack of the Clones, as I said, on the transport freighter Anakin and Padme took from Coruscant to Naboo. And the rat catcher droid, it's an LEP series service droid, appeared in the Clone Wars and in some Star Wars comics. For our Star Wars curse word of the week, one of the guards shouts, Sleemo! Which is slime ball. We heard Anakin say that to Sebulba in Phantom Menace. Chastruni Dopat Sleemo.
Sleemo.
That's fun. I like that.
I am not sure why Boba Fett thought his armor was in the Sarlacc pit. Any thoughts on that?
I'm thinking that he was just so out of it that he didn't know that, he got out. And, if anything, it should be right there on the sand. But maybe, he thought the Sarlacc swooped it back in he remembered that moment.
At the very least, he was unconscious when they took it off of him. So he doesn't know where it's gone. But you're right. He crawled out with it on. So I guess he figures
it's a little bit of a cheat there, I feel like. But maybe he just could have been out of it. But another thing is, maybe he thought it just rolled back in. I don't know. But. Like, even Fennec Shand said, hey, your armor saved you from the acid. So that sort of says you had it on when you were in there. You must have known,
Yeah. But I will say, I had a thought for the previous seasons. It's like, why he has his white overalls on. And I imagine that they were an asbestos suit like a Formula One driver would wear. So it's fireproof and it was a protective thing rather than some kind of just like canvas overall.
Okay.
Yeah.
No one's buying it. No one's buying
it. I don't know. Maybe. And then now he's going back down in there to look for the armor, and he comes up covered in acid.
Oh, yeah.
And she's saying, you know, you need to go get to a back to tank. So I kind of dug that a little because it maybe explains why he's been in the back to tank so much lately.
For so long. Yeah.
And it makes sense that he wanted to look for his armor. If you didn't see The Mandalorian, you might not understand, well, why is he so worried about his armor? But we know it's made of Beskar, this rare and strong material, yeah. And that it goes back generations in the Mandalorian tradition, you know, stuff like that.
Plus, he's not Boba Fett without the armor.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Not even, yeah. And I love that they didn't show that beak of the Sarlacc pit up until now.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're like, maybe they just didn't want to do it because it's special edition and people don't like those. And then it pops out and it was like, okay, that's cool. That's cool.
It did catch me off guard. Like, it startled me when it popped out. I must
have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
But it was done way better than Return of the Jedi because it just looks so corny.
Yeah.
They added done it better. The first time.
That's what I hope they do with Hayden Christensen. Do him better because he's going to be in Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling it'll be better, but I'm so curious to see.
I think it'll be good. Yeah, yeah, me too.
Can't be worse.
That's true. I got a low bar.
Fennec Shand says of the mayor's major domo, who they've captured, he's seeing like a Yuzum. And I looked that up. Joe Yauza, the Yuzum, is one of the creatures added to Jabba's Palace in Return of the Jedi Special Edition, the one that's just singing with his mouth wide open.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't sure why Kersantan was so angry at the Trandoshans. They really didn't say. Mm. But Wikipedia says the Trandoshans have a poor history with Wookiees. The Wookiees hate them.
Well, one of them, you know, did the tribute and brought a Wookiee pelt, you know, so.
Yeah. That's right.
All right.
And there's a long history of them hunting Wookiees, apparently.
Yeah.
And then watching the scene a second time after reading that, you can see Kersantan looking over like, I fucking hate those guys. And he's drinking, so he's just getting more and more drunk. And they're winning at gambling, and they're all happy about it.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck he's those like, guys.
Yeah, I'm ripping some arms off, damn it.
Arms are coming off.
It only takes so much.
Yeah.
It was just like, fuck this. Let's see you laugh now without your drama.
Right.
And of course, we had Han Solo telling R2-D2 and C-3PO that when a Wookiee loses, they'll rip your arm off. So we get to see him rip someone's arm off as Wookiees will. That was cool. So that's all.
But again, no blood.
Yeah, no blood.
No blood. I saw that when Obi-Wan cut that guy's arm off, there was blood there.
There was.
So they do have blood in Star Wars.
In the Star Wars universe.
Maybe, I mean, trained oceans are like lizard people. Maybe they have less blood. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's just cold.
Cold-blooded. All right. Any random notes or anything, Jonathan?
I do have one random note from an earlier episode. Eric, I think you said, did you notice the female Wookiee in the Leia bikini?
Oh, yeah.
I believe that was a female Weasel character. The Weasel character from Suicide Squad.
Oh.
Yeah. And I did a side by side. Yeah, the Weasel from Suicide Squad. I did a side by side and they look
the same,
almost identical. Yeah. Which I thought was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little aside by someone.
Anything else?
I thought, when they went into the back of Jabba's palace, that could have explained how Kersantan got in. You know, that they had cut the bars because we were all like, how in the hell did he get in there without anybody noticing?
Keep having to replace those bars.
And it's pretty convenient that they have this huge fortress and then this glowy, you know, sewer entrance that's big enough to fit a Wookiee.
Right.
Don't go in there.
And a tool that just slices through the bars.
Right, that just cuts it like butter. Like butter.
I buy all of it.
Totally.
Oh, I also like there was the twin suns that you see behind the back to tank. But then which I didn't know, the Tatooine has three moons. There was a shot where there were three moons in the sky.
Yeah,
that's totally new. They've never done that. Yeah. And one thing that I liked about the twin sun thing is that when the movie first came out, you know, scientists were saying that that's not possible, but they have found in the universe that there is a place that has two suns.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. So it is possible.
Suck it, scientists.
And there's Star Wars is real.
Right. There's a desert planet there with the Sarlacc pit.
There it is. We know where it is.
Found it.
Chris?
The only note I have this week is the scene where that Trandoshan breaks the bottle on Chrysanthemum's shoulder from behind. When we see him and the Wookiee turns around to look at him, the look on that guy's face
was
so funny.
Very small.
He looks, but his eyes were big. He's like, oh my God, what have I done? I am in so much trouble. I think, like, if that's a mask or whatever, they nailed that. I thought it looked so good.
I did too.
Well, so funny.
It kind of reminds me, I know you haven't seen much Cobra Kai, Chris, but there's two little nerdy skinny guys on there, Bert and I forget the other guy, but it just seemed like one of those, like a total little nerdy guy, like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it looked so funny.
I thought that it might be referring to from Raiders of the Lost Ark, where Indy is there's a big guy with a circular sword. Plane. Well, no, the circular plane where there's that big muscular guy, and he goes and hits him with a wrench. And he turns around and just looks at him.
That's hilarious. All right. That was great. That was fun. Let's take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. It's time for a little bit of news about Boba Fett, and just one item this week. Apparently, guys, Tamara Morrison thinks that Boba Fett talks too much. He was interviewed by NME, and he says that he talks too much. He wants to be more mysterious. Tamara Morrison said, "I was hoping not to say as much as I have already in the first two episodes. I speak far too much. In fact, in the beginning, I was trying to pass my lines on to Ming-Na. Excuse me, director. I feel like Ming-Na should say these lines because I want to stay mysterious. I want to stay quiet." I thought that was funny. He goes on to say, "Sometimes I'd say, I think this is too much. I remember John actually went away to Atlanta, so I rang Noah that night and I said, 'Noah, the scene tomorrow. I'm talking way too much. Boba doesn't talk this much. I've got all these paragraphs here. I think we should just get rid of it. And John's gone to Atlanta, so don't tell him.' The next morning, I get a call from Atlanta. John wants you to say all the dialogue. He'll cut it out later."
Sure.
So, yeah, exactly. I'm sure him and the writers are delighted that they're going to cut it all out. But what do you guys think? Is Boba not mysterious enough? Does he talk too much?
Well, he says, "I am Boba Fett" several times in this episode. But I don't find that at all. I mean, I like the whole kind of silent film vibe that Star Wars has, where it's told by a lot of pictures rather than dialogue. But I don't feel he's over talking or being over chatty.
I think we kind of talked about it in the beginning that his original appeal was that it was all mystery because he only had a few lines just had the cool armor. But I think this is what it's all about, right? We're learning about his character and who he is and how he got
talks
there,
less than Mando.
Kind of have to.
Or, I mean, more than Mando. More than Mando.
Yeah, that's
true. I think I can totally understand that. And I there is a part of me that's like, why couldn't we have just seen Boba Fett chasing down criminals on Coruscant? But I think what saves it is Temuera Morrison's such a badass and has such presence in the way his voice is and everything that if it was a lesser actor, it could kill the vibe of Boba Fett, but it's been pretty good with him.
I'm on board. I don't mind. I don't think they've done too much. Yeah. And part of the point is to reveal some of the mystery about him, right? And they do that through dialogue. I mean, sure, there's other ways, but I think it's okay. He talks just the right amount.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's quick. That's it for the news.
Cool. Let's get into some listener feedback. Should we go in the same order, Jonathan?
All right. Alicia Stout, after this episode, because they played the Mando theme music, I immediately went back to the Mandalorian season 1 episode 4, The Gunslinger, which is where we first see Fennec. Toro mentions that Fennec used to work for the Hutts. Okay, so when? It doesn't appear so in the Book of Boba Fett that she did, unless they have brought that up, or did I miss it?
So Fennec Shand was introduced, well, in The Mandalorian as an assassin who used to work some elements of the Empire, but now that she's now that the Empire's gone, she's being hunted by the New Republic or something like that. But they went back and showed her in The Bad Batch, which takes place at the end of the Clone Wars, you know, when the Empire first comes into power. And she was starting off as a mercenary / bounty hunter then. And the idea, I think, with her is that she's a badass mercenary bounty hunter who has worked for all kinds of unsavory people, including the Hutts. I don't know if we actually ever saw that. Did she work for the Hutts in Clone Wars or Bad Batch? I can't remember. But it totally makes
sense.
She
got hired, you know, to get Omega. This character. I think that was
the Empire.
Boba Fett's sister. Yeah.
But anyway, it makes sense that a character like this would work for the Hutts and anybody else who needs to hire a bounty hunter, even though we might not have seen it on screen.
Yeah. To continue, in the Mandalorian series, we see the Tusken Raiders, but in that last episode flashback back in the Book of Boba Fett, they were killed off. Or was it only Boba's tribe? I think it was only Boba's tribe.
Right? Yeah, they've even said in this series that there are many different tribes of Tusken Raiders.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make sense that they were all over the place.
Mm. Side comment. If you see an explosion far off and you immediately want to rush over to it, don't get on a Bantha. That was lame. Lol. Overall, I was 50-50 on this episode, but I do feel it's finally going forward with the main plot.
He loves his Bantha.
Yeah,
he clearly does. Yeah,
and I thought with that is that, you know, there's that movie trope of save the cat, and where if like if you show the main protagonist showing saving a cat or an animal in the film,
oh right,
he'll get sympathy. Yeah. So I think they're showing him being Boba being so nice to all the animals in this. So we'll go, that Boba Fett's a nice
even
guy.
When he punched that one in the in the early episode, and then he gave it a little pet.
Yeah, yeah exactly.
Sorry for punching you.
I wonder if that would work with a kid, with a child.
Hold on. Let me try it.
See if he still likes you.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Sherry Morford writes, good episode. We finally got an answer to Boba sleeping in the Bacta tank. He was healing all of his scars from everything he'd been through. I think he's done with it now, right? And we find out that Fennec is a mod, too. The scene at the Sarlacc pit was both scary and funny. Boba telling Fennec not to touch his buttons after she saves them both. And the slave itself, that cracked me up. I like the idea of Boba forming his own tribe, using the important things he learned from the Tuskens. And I love that it looks like Kersantan has joined his tribe. Looks like he did get bored. Can't wait to hear y'all's thoughts.
My thought is, I thought Boba Fett was very ungrateful by saying that. Come on.
All right. Barry Evitz writes, okay, good episode, but I am confused. In episode 1, Boba was wearing his armor when he escaped the Sarlacc pit, and then the Jawas stole the armor from him in his weakened state. So why in this episode did Boba go back to the Sarlacc pit looking for the armor? Am I missing something? Does he not remember this? I think that's it. He doesn't remember. Yeah. He's unconscious or just messed up.
So out of it. Yeah.
Doesn't remember.
Megan Dively Lehman says the Lehman family top three. This includes mom, dad, and Harrison, age 8. 3, we want a mouse catcher droid. It was adorable, especially when it got scared and turned itself off. That was kind of funny. Turned itself off. Yeah. Like, kind of wish I could do that sometimes. Loved how it could belly crawl anywhere a mouse could go. 2, we also want a friendly bantha that is attached to us and makes adorable sounds. Seriously, who knew Boba Fett was a pet person? 1, we had to watch the Wookiee tear the dude's arm off and throw it to the ground and resulting cantina crowd reactions twice. We were laughing so hard we had to rewind to catch the dialogue. That guy is feral.
Good stuff. That's great.
Yeah. Okay, Dave Mason. I'm assuming that the reference to Boba Fett being fully healed and that we've caught up to the storyline we already knew about, that the flashbacks have come to an end. So next week should be a fully present day episode. Sounds like it will be recruiting people based on Fennec Shand's reference to knowing where to buy muscle. My guess is that they're off to Mos Eisley. After all, you'll never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. Seems like a good place to recruit some mercenaries for hire. Do they think they'll recruit any familiar characters?
I commented on here. They played the Mandalorian theme song and he's like, oh, yeah.
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 Yeah, for sure.
And I loved your delivery of that line, Jonathan.
What practice?
Yeah,
I wonder, but who else? Do you think anyone else will turn up?
Han Solo? No, I don't know.
Just kidding. Yeah. Not Greedo.
Maybe. Yeah, not Greedo.
There have been rumors. Not Greedo. But what about Bosk? I think.
You know, oh, yeah, Bosk, we haven't seen any of
the other. Cool, yeah.
Yeah.
IG-88. That would be fun. Yep.
Oh, I loved AJ. Yeah.
Dengar. Mm-hmm. Suggus. Let's see. Brian White writes, the rat catcher might be my new favorite droid. I don't know why, but I enjoyed that scene way too much. Happy to see Slave One or Fire Spray, whatever it's being called now, flying again. So glad the Wookiee ripped the arm off. Great episode.
Well, I seem to be in the minority with the little rat catcher droid, but I'm okay with that. Yeah. That's fine. All right, Maureen Favo says, pacing was better this week. Loved, loved, loved the Sarlacc pit. The scene with Fennec trying to show her ab equipment while talking around the fire was awkward. Made me wonder, for not the first time, if this series is about testing out technology and techniques. Jennifer Beal is eating up the scenery. Amazing how she impacts her scenes much better than last week's uneven pacing.
I totally agree about Jennifer Beal. She's pretty freaking magnetic.
Love her. Yeah. And I said at the beginning, I want her to play a bigger part in this. And I don't know how she's going to now, but it would be cool.
But when she was trying to convince Castandon to put the guy down, and she was referring to his time as a gladiator, she meant every word and knew what every word meant. It wasn't like script reading. It felt like she believed in the world. I think she's been awesome in this.
Yeah,
I agree.
She's really dove into the part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she called him Santi, which I thought was
kind of
cool.
Darren Fitzpatrick says, more of a question than a comment. Can The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett exist as two different shows? No idea what Disney is planning, but surely it will have to become one show. I love both shows and both characters, but they're literally in each other's pocket. I suppose we could go down the Star Trek route and have multiple shows doing near enough the same thing as the other. Just think they need to concentrate on the flagship show. But then again, as we have seen with the MCU, they're very capable of juggling many balls at once. I mean, my first thought is, no, they're telling a different character story. I do get it, because I seriously think that Jon Favreau probably wanted to do a Boba Fett series, and they said, we'll try a Boba Fett-like character, and then they thought, oh, this is popular, go ahead and do Boba Fett. But they're making him different enough that I think it, even though they look similar, it's pretty different, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
No, I agree. I think they're different enough, and I would be more than happy to have 52 weeks of Star Wars shows once a week for years to come.
It looks like it's coming with Ahsoka and...
oh, yeah.
Yeah, Kenobi.
Kenobi, and what else? Weren't there a couple more announced? That one with, what's her name, got canceled.
The spy from...
Rogue One guy.
Yeah, the Andor, wasn't it?
Yeah, Andor.
That's
oh,
right. Yeah, yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll be good.
Yeah. All right. Sam from the UK. Hi, guys. Love the pod, long-time listener from the UK. Just quick review of episode 4. When it began, I thought, oh no, here we go again. Another back to tank of the past where we see the modified puppets, but Muppets. But at least it was justified with a new, improved Terminator Fennec. The episode only got better from there. I loved the scene where Slave One came down from the heavens to give the bikers their just desserts. Can't help but feel they've been framed by the Pikes for what happened to Boba's adopted family. Love to get your guys sorted and enjoying the book of Boba Fett, must be said.
Yeah, it seemed like there was a reason for Fennec Shand to say that, whatever she said about not thinking the bikers could do that.
Right. let's see, Tiffany Winchell. Pronounced Winchill. Winchill. Everyone mispronounces, so no apologies needed. This was about last week's episode. This was my least favorite episode. The color of the scooters was so out of place that it was distracting. The speed chase looked like they were going 10 miles an hour. And maybe it was my TV, but it looked choppy and like the characters were laid on top of the background like bad green screen.
Yep.
I don't know about you, but I have a feeling the Rancor must learn who to kill first, not who to imprint on. I hope we get to know more about Fennec Shand. Ming-Na Wen's talent is being underserved.
Yeah, she hasn't had a ton to do, but that's going to change. Yeah. That's going to change.
Yeah.
A little more this episode.
Yeah, she was great in this episode.
Yeah.
She was. Okay, Wyman Owen writes, I'm behind. I've seen the first two and would like to say that the storytelling is amazing. I am amazed at how well they can still tell a story with minimal dialogue. The sequences with Boba and the Tuskens were awesome. Can't wait to catch up. Well, you're going to get more dialogue.
Yeah, more dialogue.
That's it. No voicemail from Steve Brown this week.
Oh,
Steve. No.
Steve. Don't you love us anymore?
Those are awesome.
Disappointed.
I always picture him doing it with his phone. It just sort of like, you know, pressing the button, making a comment.
Yeah. And then, you know. He's good at capturing just the right spots to throw in a little line.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. Very good. Maybe he'll do two next week.
Yeah.
All right, that is our show. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Thank you, Jonathan. That was really fun.
Yeah,
thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me, guys. Thank you for having me.
It was so great.
If you guys listening want to write in, record a message, and send it in, you can email us at talk@podcastica.com.
You can also check us out at the Facebook page at facebook.com/podcastica.
We're also on Twitter and Instagram at podcastica.
And of course, as always, please check out the other shows on the Podcastica Network at podcastica.com. And you can check out Chris's podcast at talkingdeadpodcast.com. And what about you, Jonathan? Do you have anything you'd like to promote? What have you been up to?
Yeah, please. I'm a fashion photographer. And if you wouldn't mind checking out my Instagram page on @jbooklill, which is JBOOKALLIL. And lastly, I just want to say a shout out to Chris. Like, I've listened to you guys for years and I go way back to season 3 and I've listened to every episode. And it just really is an honor to be here with you guys. And I've really enjoyed it. And I don't think you hear from listeners enough, but you guys are such great company and you really make a difference in people's lives. And there's a lot of people out there that listen to you every week and appreciate everything you guys do. So as a listener, it really is a pleasure to be on here. So thank you for it.
Well, thanks, gosh, Jonathan. Man, that is so nice for me to say. It's amazing. It's great to have you on. And that's awesome. That's so nice.
Every time I see that you've sent in a voicemail, which isn't hardly enough, I get excited. And I know that's going to be a good little exclamation point at the end of the episode. Very much appreciate having you on board, Jonathan.
For sure.
Thank you.
And please do check out Jonathan's Instagram. He's a really good photographer. He's got some really beautiful photos up there.
Thanks, man.
All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Next time, don't touch my buttons.
Excellent.
Sorry. Didn't mean to.